Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News, where today we've got a big guest, Alan Dershowitz, the great lawyer, the great scholar, the great professor. You see him on TV, Fox News, and many other places. He's an eloquent voice and a consistent voice in the fight for free speech, which today, in cancel culture and in censorship of social media platforms, we need more than ever. And so we're going to talk to Alan about all of those things, from the Supreme Court and Amy Coney Barrett to his new book, Cancel Culture, The Latest Attack on Free Speech and Due Process, to his podcast, The Dersh Show, which comes with the wits. You get it? The Dersh Show wits. A very important discussion about what's going on in college campuses, social media firms, and other places where censorship, cancel culture, and one-party mob rule are beginning to dominate. Alan has a lot of great ideas, and we're going to talk about them. We want to talk about not just the problem, but are there solutions? Do we go to court? Do we go to trade regulations? Where is the recourse for Americans who are finding themselves silenced in this moment of cancel culture and one-party mob rule? All right, but before we get to that, we got some breaking news on the Ukraine front that I want to get to. This is an exclusive story. You're getting it first on John Solomon Reports before it shows up on justthenews.com in a couple hours. It's just something we want to do to thank you for your loyal listenership. So we're going to go to that quick commercial break. When we come back, a couple quick scoops on Ukraine and the Hunter Biden scandal. And then we're going to go to our interview with Alan Dershowitz, the great Harvard lawyer, the great constitutional scholar, the great advocate for free speech. But first, let's get a message in from our great advertisers and sponsors. Folks, we're sponsored today by Donors Trust, the tax-friendly way to preserve your charitable giving. In times of crisis, those with a giving spirit and a desire to build up civil society find ways to be helpful. And that's when it's good to have a charitable resource ready to deploy when they're needed most. Donors Trust offers donor-advised funds or giving accounts. You can use these funds as your own charitable investment account and manage your charitable giving in a way that's smart, tax-advantaged, aligned with your values, and private. Donors Trust clients are using their funds to support charities helping their local communities while also using their giving account to simultaneously support think tanks and liberty-minded organizations that believe our constitutional rights shouldn't get lost in a time of emergency. Now is the time to take a closer look at Donors Trust and join their community of liberty-minded donors by opening a donor-advised fund. Go to donorstrust.org/justnews for the ultimate survival guide to charitable giving and learn how a donor-advised fund can preserve your ability to give to the charities you love. That's donorstrust.org/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, we're just minutes away from our interview, our exclusive interview with Alan Dershowitz. He's got a new book coming out. He's got a great podcast. But most importantly, he has a lot of thoughts about how we're going to battle this era of cancel culture and censorship that is waving across America in ways that I think is detrimental to our society, to our democracy, to our constitutional republic. And we're going to talk to Alan about that. Not only what is the problem, but what is the solution or solutions? First, I want to give you a couple of heads up. I'm going to give you a tip. I have a funny feeling if you tune in to Tucker Carlson tonight, you may hear the first audio tapes. Keep in mind, we've already had text messages from Hunter Biden. We've had State Department FOIA documents about Hunter Biden. We've had emails from and about Hunter Biden. We've got a lot of paper and a lot of text and a lot of phone communications about Hunter Biden and his business relationships across the country. But what we haven't had are video and audio. Tonight, I'm hearing that on the Tucker Carlson show, when Tony Bobulinski, the former business partner, associate CEO of a China business seeking company that Hunter Biden was involved with in 2017, we may hear the first audio tapes of Hunter Biden talking about the family business And I encourage you to stay tuned to that. We'll have all the developments on justthenews.com. Of course, you can watch Tucker's show on Fox News if that's helpful as well. But we're going to cover it for you and sort it all out as soon as the news breaks. But that's what I'm being told by good sources and important sources. Secondly, a lot of people are saying, how do I make sense of all of this Ukraine, China, Kazakhstan, Russia business? It's making my head spin. There's got to be a simple way to share to my friends why I think this matters. Well, Newt Gingrich has just put out a new YouTube video. It's up on our website, justthenews.com. It kind of boils down the issues in the Biden family business scandal and why you may want to share it with your friends. It kind of makes it simple. It breaks it down in small bites. It's a 30-minute videotape. It's on YouTube, but it breaks down the issues in 4, 5, 6, 7 very simple bites and help you understand why it should matter, why it should matter, even if you support Joe Biden, why it matters that these issues are a problem. So encourage you to see that. That's up on justthenews.com. Our story with Rick Grinnell, the former DNI, predicting audio tapes are about to come out of Hunter Biden. That'll be coming out tonight. You can check that out. Daniel Payne has that on the website. Please check it out and be there. Now, I promised you one exclusive story that you're going to get first here on John Solomon Reports before we put it up on Just the News, and here it is. We have been working for quite some time to get this information confirmed, but we now can confirm that Hunter Biden's work at Burisma, the Ukraine company with a long record of corruption, a gas company, also involved a deal in Kazakhstan that his compensation was tied to. So in 2014, while his dad was vice president, while Burisma Holdings was under corruption investigation in Ukraine, he and his business partner helped facilitate a gas deal in neighboring Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan is another one of the former Soviet republics like Ukraine. It also has a history of corruption and strong-armed men and other things. And yet, Hunter Biden and Devin Archer apparently facilitate with their boss, Mykola Zolchevsky, the owner of Burisma, a man accused of corruption in Ukraine, though never convicted. And they set up this deal. And what is really unique about it is that in 2017, fast forward 3 years ahead, by that time, Hunter Biden's collected $4 million with his partner, Devin Archer, from Burisma. We know that from the Senate report, from the FBI records that were obtained from Hunter Biden's company. So Burisma was worth $4 million to him in the first couple of years. We now know that Hunter Biden was fighting to keep his money, the spigot of money, flowing from Burisma. That's important because it kind of suggests it was in jeopardy, right? And it's in jeopardy maybe because Joe Biden's no longer in power. He's no longer in a position to have influence or affect policy. And Hunter Biden is worried he's about to lose his money. How do we know this? There are text messages between him and Tony Bobulinski, the CEO of this venture called Sinohawk. That was the Biden family and Tony and some other investors, Rob Walker and others, trying to put together a deal with China, a Chinese company in communist China. While that's going on, Bobulinski's pressing Hunter Biden, saying, hey, where are you in getting these deliverables done on the China deal? And he finds out that Hunter Biden is not working on the China deal. He's working on an old Burisma deal, trying to save the Kazakhstan deal. He finds out that he's actually on a yacht with Mykola Zolchevsky, the owner of Burisma, trying to salvage this deal. And he texts back, these are a direct quote. You're going to hear them from me first. You're going to read them on Just the News first. But here it is. It starts with an expletive. He's mad at Tony Bobulinski for pressing him. He goes, F you, Tony. I wasn't asleep. And those guys work for the Ukrainians. And they think I haven't left my room in 3 days. I was on Nikolai's boat arguing about my position in their Kazakh deal, and it was heated. I couldn't call because I was fighting for the only income I have left right now from Burisma. It was very heated and very tense and an extremely unavoidable meeting negotiation that had a lot more at stake than me meeting you to say I'm not sending that letter to the chairman under any circumstances. All right, I want to give you that one line that matters. let's get the exact word. It was very heated, very tense, and extremely avoidable. I wasn't asleep. He's talking about the criticism he had gotten. I was fighting to keep the only money I have left right now from Burisma. Let me read that again. I couldn't call because I was fighting for the only income I have left right now from Burisma. This is in June of 17. It's in a period when Joe Biden's been out of office 5 years. Hunter Biden's already gotten $3-4 million out of Burisma, and he's worried that the gravy train that started when his father was vice president may be coming to an end. Very important revelation that kind of fills out why you should care about the Hunter Biden Burisma Ukraine scandal. Not only was it a conflict of interest for Joe Biden to continue to oversee anti-corruption action, anti-corruption policy in Ukraine for the United States while his son was working for a company under corruption investigation, it also raises the possibility that the only reason Hunter Biden was getting these gigs was because of the proximity of his father to power, and that when that proximity waned, Joe Biden left office, was just a normal Joe again, not the second most powerful man in the world. The willingness of these foreign entities to keep paying him seemed to wane, at least in the case of Burisma. As he said, it was a heated discussion. He was fighting for his only money he had left from Burisma. A very important revelation, a very important story. You're going to get it on justthenews.com this afternoon. You've got it first. As a loyal listener to this great podcast, I'm so grateful. Thank you for your support. Thank you for joining us every day when we go live with our newest podcast. So, all right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, yes, it is time for Alan Dershowitz, the great lawyer, the great scholar, the great champion of free speech and due process, here to talk about cancel culture, his own run-in with it, how he's been shunned on Martha's Vineyard by his old liberal friends, and what we can do about it to change the us versus them cancel culture mentality, the censorship mentality in America. We're going to come right back to that right after this commercial break from our great advertisers and our great sponsors. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, somebody whose impact on the law and on the public dialogue is humongous. It's Alan Dershowitz, the great Harvard Law professor, the great New York Times bestselling author, the great lawyer, and of course you see him on Fox News and many other programs all the time. Professor Dershowitz, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm a fan of yours and of your podcast, so it's an honor to be on with you.
Well, I'm listener number one on the Dersh Show, your great podcast. And folks, if you haven't subscribed to it, you got to get it on Apple. It's fantastic.
I appreciate it. It's the Dersh Show. The only thing it lacks is wits, and that comes from my listeners. You bring the wits to the show, and then we have the Dersh Show wits.
I love it. That's incredibly witty. It's a tremendous show, and available everywhere podcasts are. So, folks, if you haven't gotten it, download it, subscribe. It is a must listen to, particularly in this incredible era that we live in, where where free speech and due process and respect for the law and order is often in jeopardy. And I think Alan does a great job with that. So you also have a book coming. I want to get to this because I want to forget this, but you've got a new book coming out, I think just before Thanksgiving, called Cancel Culture, The Latest Attack on Free Speech and Due Process. What inspired you to write yet another great book?
Well, the cancel culture is a direct frontal attack on not only freedom of speech, it cancels those who they disagree with. It doesn't cancel people who are the heroes of identity politics, no matter what they've done, they never get canceled. And then it also cancels due process. It doesn't matter whether you're innocent or guilty. If you've been accused, you're canceled. I'll give you an example. The 92nd Street Y, which was the predominant place for intellectuals in New York to speak, particularly Jewish intellectuals. I spoke there 25 times. I was the second most popular speaker after Elie Wiesel. As soon as I was falsely accused by a woman I never met, the 92nd Street Y canceled me. They said, "We know you're innocent. We've seen the evidence. We've seen her emails that prove she never met you. But you've been accused, and we don't want to have you ever speak here again because it will cause trouble." That reminds me of when I was growing up, McCarthyism.
Yeah.
People who were accused may have been innocent, but they didn't want trouble, so they got canceled. And that's part of the cancel culture. When in doubt, cancel. Don't give the person an opportunity to prove his innocence. Don't prove that the people who have accused him are the guilty ones. Just cancel, cancel, cancel. That's what the culture does.
It's unbelievable. The idea that someone's entitled to be presumed innocent, entitled to their defense, is almost gone out the window, certainly in the court of public opinion.
But even presumed innocent is not enough. Even if you prove your innocence, even if there's a presumption of guilt, which you overcome and prove.
Right.
In my case, I have a tape recording by the accuser's lawyer admitting that she was wrong to accuse me and that I couldn't have been in the place that she claimed I was.
Unbelievable.
That's not enough. It's not a presumption of innocence. It's an irrebuttable presumption of guilt that cannot be overcome by evidence.
It's unbelievable. And for folks, if you don't know what Alan's referring to, this is a woman named Miss Jifra, who was involved in the Epstein situation. She accused falsely Alan of participating in some activities. And your point is you've never met her. Her lawyers admit you never met her, and yet you can't get the stain of her accusation from
right. And I'll give you another example. Her own lawyer is David Boies.
Right.
David Boies represented Al Gore in the Bush versus Gore.
That's right, Boies Schiller.
Al Gore was also accused by Gouffre of being on Epstein's island with his wife. Turns out Al Gore never met Epstein, never heard of Epstein, was never on the island. All David Boies had to do was call his old client, as I did, his office, and say, "Al Gore, were you ever on Jeffrey Epstein's island?" "No, of course not." So in other words, Gouffre is lying, but David Boies didn't even do that because he knew, he's the lawyer I have on tape, he knew I didn't do it, but it didn't matter to him because there was money at stake. Mm. She was trying to get $1 billion from Leslie Wexner using me as the stalking horse. And in the end, I got canceled as a result of it. And so I'm fighting back. They picked on the wrong innocent person because I have nothing to hide. I've lived an exemplary private life. I've never had sex with anybody other than my wife during the relevant time period.
Right.
So I'm fighting back, but it's, you know, it's costing me. And so what do I do when I fight back? I write a book. So I wrote a book called Cancel Culture.
Well, it's a must read. I can't wait for it to come out. I guess it comes out November 17th, I see here. So folks, I highly recommend you grab this book because Professor Dershowitz has been on the front lines for a long time before it was popular to fight for free speech, going all the way back to the 60s and 70s. Talk a little bit, Alan, about how this has sort of come full circle. There was an era in the 60s where liberals found their voices often canceled, and often by the power of the government, the crushing power of the state. You're on the front lines of that. And today, there are still liberals being canceled for various reasons, too. But there seems to be the reverse of it. A lot of it is liberals trying to cancel out conservative voices. Is there an irony to the evolution? And what has led us to this moment?
Well, it's not an irony. It's a hypocrisy. Look, very few people actually believe in free speech for thee as well as for me. So the liberals were in favor of free speech in the 60s because McCarthyism was not allowing liberals to speak. Now that political correctness is not allowing conservatives to speak, suddenly there are many liberals who don't favor free speech and many conservatives who do. A plague on both your houses. You know, be principled, support right. free speech for your enemies. In one of the articles I wrote, I talked about joining the First Amendment Club. To get membership in the First Amendment Club, you have to actively support the right of people you strongly hate. If you're a Jew, you have to be out there supporting the right of Holocaust deniers to preach their horrible evil in the court of public opinion. If you're African American, you have to be out there being able to defend the Ku Klux Klan or anybody right. else's right of free speech. You have to be willing to support the free speech of your enemies. You have to buy into Voltaire's notion. I disagree with you, but I will defend to the death your right to express your views. How many people actually support that position? You can really count them on one hand.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to, because there are these emotional issues. If you're a Jew or and you've been wronged by the Holocaust, and you're an African American sure. who has, you know, family who were wronged by slavery and other things, it's hard to let go of those emotional ties. But that's what the First Amendment was originally created to do. And we're in an era where that First Amendment seems to be on life support right now.
It's worse than life support, because its greatest vulnerability is on universities. And who are the university students? They're our future leaders. For example, a very able journalist, Emily Bazelon, wrote a piece in the New York Times last weekend, which basically justified and glorified the efforts to try to repress free speech. The New York Times, the very same week, listed Angela Davis as one of the great, great heroes of America. Angela Davis was a Stalinist
right.
who tried desperately to prevent free speech and defended Stalin and Mao and all of those who suppressed free speech. And yet she's now the hero of the New York Times. The New York Times has become part of the problem itself because it suppresses free speech on its editorial pages that are not consistent with its own narrative.
Yeah, and we saw some high profile departures as a result of that censorship or
and look
suppression.
Look at NPR. NPR mm-hmm. won't report on the Hunter Biden episode,
yep.
even though we don't know whether it's true. As a voter, I'm a liberal Democrat.
Right.
I've never voted for a Republican candidate for president, but I want to know whether that laptop belonged to Hunter Biden. I want to know whether the emails on it are authentic, and NPR won't tell me, even though it's government funded. And it's supposed to be neutral. And Twitter won't tell me. And Facebook won't tell me, because they don't like the politics and the way it would be misused against their candidate. I think we're entitled as voters to know. So we're seeing free speech attacked from every corner, from the media, from the social media, from students, from liberals. You name it, we're seeing it attacked. And it's really, as you say, on life support.
It is a remarkable thing. And you have one of the great legal minds. And I've sat here for quite some time saying, how do we fix this? How do we fight this? What is the legal tact? What is the, you know, there's a societal tact, obviously, but it has gotten so prevalent and so quickly furious. I mean, it's picked up in speed just in the last 4 or 6 weeks in ways I never would have imagined. Is there any recourse to pushing this toothpaste back in the tube?
Well, I think ironically, the newly emerging conservative 6-3 Supreme Court will probably be more supportive of free speech than a current liberal Supreme Court. You know, back in the day, the great supporters of free speech were William O. Douglas,
of course,
Justice Black, Justice yep. Goldberg, Justice Warren. Not today. Today, I suspect that Amy Coney Barrett will support free speech, maybe only because free speech today is a conservative cause. I don't know. Maybe out of deep principle. But Justice Scalia was a supporter of free speech when he was on the Supreme Court. And it's a good thing we have conservatives today supporting free speech. You know, the test for them will be when it's the conservatives who are suppressing free speech by liberals. Let's see if they stick to their principles.
Yeah, they stick to their principles. Well, that's the big question that your book raises, right? Which is, can yep. we be principled even when it's not popular or personally satisfying to be principled? And we're in a moment where that's greatly challenged. When you look out at the social media players, Facebook and Twitter, with their extraordinary acts of censorship in the last few months and weeks, is there a claim, I've been thinking about this, is there a claim that because their businesses basically are an interstate commerce exchange of ideas, money's made where ideas are exchanged, is there a claim under the Interstate Commerce Clause? Is there a claim under the use of the fact that the internet uses our public airspace? Is there some claim that a great lawyer could bring to challenge what they're doing?
Yes, I think even a pretty good lawyer could do it, particularly under the provisions that were enacted some years ago, exempting social media platforms
right.
from being sued for defamation.
Section 230,
because
right?
Because they're only platforms. And if you're platforms and you don't engage in what publishers do, picking and choosing what you're going to publish, then you should be exempt. But now that Twitter and Facebook are picking and choosing, and I'll give you an example. YouTube has a mark next to a speech I made about how Israel has its right to exist was established by law, that it has great legal principles standing behind it.
Right.
They indicated that was not appropriate for children. And so a lawsuit is now being brought, not by me, but by somebody else challenging.
I'm sorry, it's not appropriate for children to hear that there's a legal right for the existence of Israel?
Right. Right.
Wow.
Apparently, they have an algorithm, and the algorithm says when you deal with Israel and Palestine, it's so controversial and so disputed that maybe children shouldn't be able to hear it. But
wow.
And their claim is no human being made that decision. It was made by a machine. So there are challenges going on. I think the great First Amendment issues of the second quarter of the 21st century will be whether the internet could be subject to government controls. You know, as Winston Churchill once said about democracy, the First Amendment is the same thing. It may be the worst possible solution, except for all the others that have been tried over time. would you rather have the current situation, or would you rather have the government telling Twitter and Facebook what they can say and what they can do? Mm. NPR is a special case because it is a governmentally supported
right.
institution. And, you know, I've always wondered whether there should be an NPR reporting the news. There should be, obviously, public support for the arts, for neutral aspects. But should the government really be in the business of telling us how to watch the news and what should be on the news? You know, that's Pravda, and we don't want Pravda in America. So, you know, libertarians, and I think of myself as a libertarian, are really facing great challenges today. And we have to stick to our principles, and we have to fight harder than ever for free speech and due process, which are the hallmarks of any free society. It was Justice Frankfurter who once said that the history of liberty is a history of due process, a history of procedures, a history of process itself. You know, you never can be assured when you have due process what the end result is going to be. And we as libertarians ought to be more concerned with the process than with the end result. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. There's going to be an election. Maybe my candidate will win. Maybe my candidate will lose. The key is that the election is fair. We'll have a debate. Maybe I'll win. Maybe I'll lose. The key is that we all have the right to express our free speech. There'll be a trial. Maybe my client will win. Maybe we'll lose. But the key is that there's due process, and that's what we have to defend.
Do you worry about the culture of a generation? The millennials seem to be a generation where the ends justify the means and the due process isn't as important as it used to be. Is there a generational disconnect in the very arguments that you so eloquently make?
No doubt. And read Emily Bazelon's piece in the New York Times, and you'll see that generational issue. The millennials know the truth with a capital T. It's like they were on Sinai and God delivered to them the
tablets,
78 commandments that they now have. They know the truth. Why do you need to give the other side a chance to express its lies when we know the truth? We know the truth. If a woman accuses a man, of course she's telling the truth. And of
right.
course the man is lying. Why do you need due process? That's a waste of time. Not only is it a waste of time, but it involves attacking the accuser. Oh, my God. Criticizing the accuser. Victimizing the victims again. That's what due process is about. You can't accuse somebody of something without subjecting yourself to due process, which is the greatest engine for determining the truth ever invented. And so, yes, the millennial generation is impatient with process. They want to get to the truth. They don't have to get to it. They know it. They know it. They know it's based on identity. They know that Martin Luther King was wrong when he said, "I want my children to be judged by the quality of their character rather than the color of their skin." No! The millennials want you to be judged by the color of your skin, by your sexual orientation, by where you come from, by what your politics are, not by your character. That's meritocracy. Meritocracy is a filthy, dirty word. in my book on cancel culture, I have a whole chapter on how cancel culture is canceling meritocracy.
It's crazy,
isn't
it? It's
substituting identity politics for meritocracy. They want to abolish grades. How did I become a well-known lawyer? I came from a family, nobody went to college, nobody was educated.
Right.
I finished first in my class on an objective testing system. That's how I became editor-in-chief of the Yale Law Journal. How did Ruth Bader Ginsburg get on the Supreme Court? She finished first in her class, a Jewish woman from Brooklyn on the Supreme Court of the United States.
Pretty impressive.
She once asked a question. I had lunch with her. She said, what's the difference between a bookkeeper in the garment district and a Supreme Court justice? And the answer was one generation.
Wow.
And that was her mother. She only made it through meritocracy. And yet, although she is a paragon, and she should be, of the liberal cause, the way she made it is regarded as against the current train of thought. You don't make it on meritocracy. You make it on your identity, on who you are. We don't listen to you because you have better ideas. We listen to you because of what your race is, what your gender is, what your sexual orientation is. Other than that, if you're a white male, shut up. Who wants to hear you? Albert Einstein? Who's interested in Albert Einstein? He was a white Jewish male. Forget about it. We'd rather listen to some obscure person who has the right racial and ethnic and identity characteristics. That's the future unless we stop it.
The petri dish of this experience of substituting meritocracy with identity politics, where did it begin? Where is the lab where all of this was born that an entire generation got indoctrinated to think this way?
In universities following the Vietnam War, and it was developed through a concept called intersectionality, which says that all oppressed people, except Jews and Zionists, but most oppressed people, are oppressed by exactly the same people, white, male, colonial, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we all have, all the oppressed people have to get together so that Muslims have to get together with gay people, even though in Muslim-dominated countries around the world, not all, they oppress gay people. In Iran, they hang and throw them off the roof. But intersectionality people say, no, no, if you're Muslim and you're gay, you have to get together because your identity politics pushes you in that direction. It's absurd. It's not scholarship. It's advocacy and it's propaganda, but it's caught on in universities. And if you look at what's going on in universities today, the courses that are being taught unbelievable. They're not courses. You know, 50 years I taught at Harvard, I never expressed a private opinion in my classroom. I did outside the classroom, of course. My job was to teach the students not what to think, but how to think. How to analyze problems and how to debate all sides of an issue and how to intellectually focus on how to get to the truth.
Right.
I didn't try to teach my students what the truth was. That's up to them. They come to the class with backgrounds, religious backgrounds, political backgrounds, moral backgrounds. I'm not trying to change that. I'm trying to, if they're a conservative, I want to make them a better conservative. If they're a liberal, I want to make them a smarter liberal. That was my job as a teacher. No more. Today it's propaganda. It's ideology, and if you don't express the ideology of the teacher, you're not going to get the recommendation, you're going to be graded down, and you're going to be discriminated against. That's just not right.
Do you have a solution? First off, who are the movers and shakers that got a hold of this system? Is there foreign influence? Is there just ideologues? How did, you know, the vast majority of our universities become this indoctrinated oriented rather than truth-seeking oriented?
Yeah, it's, you know, kind of left-wing people who were active in the anti-Vietnam movement. I was too, but I was as a liberal, not as a radical.
Right.
And so what you found was when those people became professors and dominated, they began to focus on the Noam Chomsky approach, on Norman Finkelstein, on some of the others, and, you know, they bought into the whole notion of you don't need dissent on campus. All you need is to apply the same rules. In my book, I quote scholar after scholar. They're not really scholars. They're propagandists and advocates who push this position on college campuses, and they pushed it quite successfully.
Well, it is remarkable to see. And I've interviewed a lot of young students who can't separate what their professors told them from their own value system. And that's a scary moment when we've handicapped young people from being able to exercise their own value system because they're fearful they won't get the grade, they won't get the graduation, they won't get the recommendation.
Or they won't get the friends. You know, peer pressure is enormous as well on college campuses. Look what happened to Ron Sullivan. Here is a great professor, the first African-American to become the dean of a college at Harvard College. And he gets fired because of student pressure because he dared to represent Harvey Weinstein. He wasn't his friend.
Right.
He was his lawyer. Yep. And the students said they were afraid. They were in fear. They were scared to be in the same room as Ron Sullivan because of who his client was. They weren't scared a year earlier when he represented a double murderer who was convicted of double murder. That didn't scare them. But Harvey Weinstein, because he was their lawyer, that scared them. I mean, and the faculty falls for this, and Harvard fired the guy. Unbelievably.
Yeah, no, there's no merit for, I mean, we've created a system where people are entitled to good representation, even in the most heinous of criminal
course,
situations.
Of and John Adams represented the people who were responsible for the massacre, the Boston Massacre. And, you know, he ultimately became president, though he lost a lot of friends in the process, as I have. You know, I'm on Martha's Vineyard now. And I'm trying to stay away from people because of the coronavirus. It's very easy because nobody wants to talk to me.
Wow.
I've lost 15 pounds on what I call the Trump diet because I defended the president on the floor of the Senate. Right. Nobody invites me to dinner. So I'm in the best health I've been in a long time.
I guess you have something to thank your critics for in a strange, twisted way. We've talked about the universities. We've talked about the social media giants. We've talked about the millennial generation. I want to talk about my profession, journalism, because I think it's a big perpetrator in this moment in history. You're a voracious reader. You're so well studied. You've watched the media for 50, 60 years of your career. What is right and wrong with the media today?
What's right is those few journalistic endeavors that really separate opinion from fact. I think the Wall Street Journal is getting it right. I think the New York Times is losing its place in history. It is no longer the newspaper of record. Wow. It is no longer highly respected as being objective. It now places its opinions on the front page. It's called news analysis. It's not news analysis. It's opinion.
Yeah.
And it limits its op-ed pages to people who essentially agree with it, whereas the Wall Street Journal, I think, has had a much, much clearer separation of editorial policy from the news.
Yeah, that's a great
point.
But
today, Walter Cronkite couldn't get a job on television.
Isn't that amazing?
Nobody wants to hear objective, neutral, nuanced, calibrated reports. Everybody wants to hear, are you for the Red Sox or the Yankees?
Yeah.
What team are you on? Either Trump is the worst president who's never done anything right, or he's the greatest man who ever set foot on the earth.
Right.
You can't get a balanced assessment. When I try to go on television and say, look, Trump has done some good things. The Middle East has been a great success. On the other hand, his policies toward healthcare, they don't want that. I never forget getting a call once from NPR saying, we'd like to have you on about this and this issue. Which side are you on? And I said, look, here's my position. They said, no, we're not interested. That's a middle ground position. We want you to take a strong position one side or
the
other.
Isn't that amazing? Wow.
Yeah, and that's NPR.
We're staging theater. We're no longer doing news. We're staging theater.
That's absolutely right. And the New York Times is at the center of it. They are the primary villain in this regard because they've turned from being a newspaper of record to a newspaper of partisan politics.
It's so hard for me to say or even hear that, but I agree with it now because I've watched, you know, one of the great institutions of journalism pick one side over the other and not even to pretend any longer. It's in one camp and that's it. This question comes up. Last question we'll get to because I know you got to get rolling. New York Times versus Sullivan is, of course, the monumental case that set the libel laws for the last 50, 60 years of American history. When you look at the fact that so many articles were published about Donald Trump and Russia collusion that turned out to be blatantly false based on a document that was, you know, remotely garbage. I mean, it was, you know, the intelligence community knew what it was and used it. Is there a moment here where the standards of libel and legal recourse could be changed? You see people like Devin Nunes suing. I'm not sure whether he's going to have any luck. But is there a standard where even people of public figures have an opportunity to get some of their reputation back? I mean, you're a great example, right?
Yeah. No, I'm suing CNN as now because CNN doctored a tape. I was on the floor of the Senate. Everybody could see it. Right. I was on the floor of the Senate, and I said, if the president commits a crime, does anything unlawful, he can be impeached. But if it's a completely lawful quid pro quo, just because he wanted to be elected president and thought that was in the national interest, that is not impeachable. They doctored the tape to take out all references to illegal. Wow. And had me saying a president can do anything he wants to get elected as long as he thinks it's in the national interest. And I'm suing them under New York Times versus Sullivan, because there they did it with malice. They did it deliberately. It came from the very top. They doctored the tape with an intention to make me say the opposite of what I said.
It's breathtaking. Do you think the courts will create a new standard in this era of social media? I mean, obviously the standard was created in a time where you didn't have 5,000 amplifications within a second of something coming out about you. It's hard to get it back because it moves at such speed now, and it's such with it. Your reputation never comes back. I still have people that, you know, have asked me about things that someone said. I didn't even know they said it. And you got through social media and you find out about it 6 months later and like, how did that, you know, that's not even true. I can prove it's not true.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you can prove. It was Winston Churchill who once said, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth can get its shoes on. Today, you can't even find your shoes. It goes around the world so quickly, and there's no way of undoing it. The accusation appears in the front page. The apology appears in the bottom of page 23.
Exactly.
Often days later. And there have to be ways of remedying it. One of the proposals I've made is to create a Me Too court. An informal court of, say, former retired judges or justices who would be able to hear a case if you've been falsely accused, as I have. You bring the case to the court, you present your evidence, and then they come to three possible verdicts, guilty, not guilty, or inconclusive. But at least you have access to an institution. Right now, there's no institution that's prepared to listen to claims of innocence if the accuser is a woman. So we need to have process in place so that a fairness and an ability to overcome the current presumption of guilt can operate. And so I'm pushing in that direction too.
It's a must needed conversation for many reasons. And you know, right now it's men being accused by women, but this modality will change. And once we become a country of mob rule, and the process of due process is thrown out the window, any cause can take by emotion. Sure. I think that's what's so critical to what you, the very important words you speak every day on your podcast, the Durst Show, and Cancel Culture, the book, all the things you're doing. Do you feel optimistic about the future, or are you pessimistic about the future?
You know, in Israel, they say a pessimist is somebody who says, oh, things are so bad, they can't get worse. And an optimist says, yes, they can. So I'm an optimist in the sense that I think things could get worse. But I believe with Martin Luther King that the arc of justice may be slow, but it moves in the direction of justice. And I hope that we'll get out of this period of repression. And, you know, I hate when these people call themselves progressives, when they are among the most regressive people imaginable. And I hope we'll grow out of that age, and I hope our next generation will see much more virtue in the traditional values of free speech and due process.
I can count myself an optimist, too, and I hope my greatest hope is that our children's children's children just hear what you said, because your wisdom is worth passing generations down. You have been such an eloquent voice, Alan, in the public space for so long, and a voice of reason. And whether it was on liberal issues, conservative issues, you've had a consistency that should be admired in America. And so on behalf of all our great listeners, thank you for all that you do to speak wisdom to a population that's awful and tangled in motion.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's such an honor to be on with you. I've been a long admirer of your honesty and your directness. So thanks again for having me on.
Thank you, Alan. Good luck with the book. All right, folks, we're going to come right back and wrap things up in a few seconds. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Alan Dershowitz as much as I did. He's an absolute brilliant man with a lot to say. And what gives him such street creds is he's a liberal that will defend a conservative when due process, free speech, the First Amendment calls for it. He has stood up for people who were canceled many times in his career. This was just one of many examples, and I hope you enjoyed that time with him. Be sure to go to justinnews.com, check out those stories I told you about, the audio tapes possibly coming out about Hunter Biden, the Newt Gingrich video breaking down the Biden scandal, making some sense of it, and of course, my exclusive with my colleague Seamus Brunner, the same guy that wrote our book together. We wrote the book together, Fallout. We've got a new exclusive story about Hunter Biden, Burisma, Ukraine, and Hunter Biden's big lament in 2017 that the gravy train at Ukraine's Burisma might be coming to an end for him. All right, you've been listening to John Solomon Reports, a podcast from justthenews.com. Thank you. We'll be back soon with another edition. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews, and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and, of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS for 15% off.